This is Let's Hear It on Classical WMUK, also streaming at WMUK.org. And all this week I've had wonderful live guests here in the studio, and today is no exception. In the studio with me, Tom Fielding of St. Augustine Cathedral, music director there and the proprietor of the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Kara.
And Rhonda Sider Edgington, who is the featured organist in a duo concert to be held tonight at 7 o'clock. Rhonda, you'll be joined by Brian Reichenbach as Great Lakes Duo with some wonderful music for trumpet and organ. And it's nice to talk to you again.
Thank you. Nice to be here again.
It has been some years. We're all getting reacquainted. At least I am with you, and Tom and I are, actually, we see each other plenty, quite
right.
A lot. So the series is continuing with this duo, and I'm wondering, I mean, you have a lot of connections and friendships in the organ world, in the sacred music world. How long have you known Rhonda?
I first went to grad school in 1999 at IU Bloomington, and Rhonda was just finishing up your coursework in comprehensive exams, I believe. Is that right?
I was finishing my master's at the time.
Your master's at the time. And she was the dean of the student AGO chapter. And so we overlapped just for a year. She ran off quickly after that. I don't think that was my fault. So I've known her for a number of years. And then it just turned out when I came here, she just happened to be already in Holland, Michigan, working, doing a lot of freelance work. So we became a little reacquainted. And we were trying to think how long ago, I should have looked this up, but I think it was 2000, maybe 13 or 14, that she came and did played the complete Messiaen Le Cor Glorieux with Cher Farrell, choreographed it. And of course, you know, we're all sorry that she passed recently. But that was a very memorable concert because it was such a unique presentation, and it was really well received because Messiaen's music, you know, can be a little opaque, but the audience, I think that the dance, the choreography really helped people just bring that piece alive in a very new and fresh way.
Okay, first you're willing to serve as a chapter president in school, and then you're coming here with a program of Messiaen. You are not afraid of big challenges. What you'd like to challenge yourself, I'm taking it.
Yeah, that's true. And I always like coming up with ideas. So it's been fun to have Tom to bounce some crazy ideas off of.
Today you have a partner. Would you tell us about this duo and your relationship with Brian Reichenbach and how this musical partnership got going?
Yeah, so Brian and I actually met a long time ago, too. We were at the same undergrad, Wheaton College, outside of Chicago, although I was there a little before he was. And after I finished my master's in Bloomington, I moved to Chicago, had a church job there, and Brian was still in the area, so he ended up playing at the church where I was with his brass quartet. We played together quite a bit. And then I moved to Germany, so we didn't see each other for 7 years. And the craziest thing was we were both at Blue Lake Family Suzuki Camp with our kids and saw each other there. We hadn't seen each other since I left Chicago, right? 7 years later, and we were like, oh, hey. And I said, oh, I'm moving to Michigan. He's like, I'm still in Chicago. And we were like, oh, we should get together. We should play together. So then we started, at the time he was still in Chicago. He was teaching at Trinity International University. And so we did some different concerts together here in Michigan at my church, played together in Chicago, a number of different places. So that's been a lot of fun. And just recently, he took a job in Tennessee, Cleveland, Tennessee, at Lee University. Oh. So now it's not quite as convenient to play together. So, but I was down there about a month ago and played at a number of places with him. And now he's coming up here for his little West Michigan tour. So we're playing tonight in Kalamazoo and tomorrow at Calvin, where I teach.
Tonight's concert begins at 7 o'clock, and it features a variety of pieces, many of them fairly new, I understand. And why don't we listen to one of the pieces that you brought along? There is a commercially available recording. Will you have some with you tonight, perhaps?
We will. You have to talk to us privately, but we can hook you up.
It's called Great Lakes Duo, Music for Trumpet and Organ in the 21st Century, which you introduce the third movement glittering, a glow from the Solstice Sonata. Who's the composer?
Composer is Carson Kumin, who is composer in residence at Harvard. And we have played this piece a lot. Audiences really love it. And yeah, a little solstice sounds great right about now, too. But I think this movement is lovely. It starts off, I think, a little bit like a sunrise. It starts off really dreamy. And then it kind of awakens into this festive, joyful dance section.
We'll listen to this and we'll be back with Rhonda Edgington, half of the Great Lakes Duo, performing tonight at 7 o'clock. And we're also with organist and music director at St. Augustine, Tom Fielding, who is the curator of the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series. That is trumpet and organ music by Carson Kumin, and we're with Rhonda Edgington, who is the organist in that music we just heard. Her trumpet playing a musical partner, Brian Reichenbach, and together they are Great Lakes Duo. If you just tuned in, I actually have Rhonda here in the studio at Classical WMUK, and she and Brian will be performing tonight at 7 o'clock on the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series, which is held at St. Augustine Cathedral. And maybe I'm going to check in here with Tom Fielding, music director at St. Augustine, about the series. We've already had a chance to talk about the series coming back to the cathedral. You're very pleased with the acoustics and all the upgrades the cathedral received. The organ sounds wonderful, and you've already presented concerts there. And that you were telling me before we went on that you do need to inform listeners about some changes in upcoming concerts.
Yeah, Kara. So just a side note, you mentioned how the organ sounds. So we rededicated the space last December 13th. And so I've heard recordings of the organ, and of course in the gallery I'm so close to it you don't get the full sense. So last month's concert with Krista Miller was the first time I got to sit down and hear the organ from downstairs.
Really?
And it is just the transformation of this instrument in the acoustic is just absolute magic. it's really something to behold and to bask in. So in the spring we have Karen Kness, who's faculty here, and Antona Yost, who is a freelance opera singer based in Ann Arbor, joined with some local KSO string players. We're going to present the Pergolesi Stabat Mater, and that was originally scheduled for March 6th. We had a conflict with the week before. We scheduled all this, and none of the string players put the pieces together to tell me that that's also a dress week for the symphony, so they had no evenings for rehearsal.
I see.
So we've just slid it back one Sunday to the 13th of March, which again had a rehearsal conflict. So rather than 5 p.m., that will also be at 7 p.m. So that concert is now March 13th at 7 p.m.
Is that a Friday or a Sunday?
That is a Sunday afternoon, yeah.
Okay.
And then the following month in April, we were to have an organist, Gediamin Gruba from Poland, And that was a COVID postponement. Mm. So we rescheduled for April, and he was, of course, coming that way. He was going to do several concerts throughout the Midwest, and his other venues decided to postpone until the fall. So we've also postponed him until the fall, and with March being a later concert, where I'm not going to try to schedule something else, so we'll just have the one concert this spring, and hopefully things will be much more on track in the fall of 2022.
Here in Kalamazoo, we have the Gilmore Piano Festival. As an organist, are you prepared to say organ is a level of difficulty higher than the piano?
No, actually. I think organists and pianists, the repertoire that is idiomatic to the instruments, even though the keyboard layout is the same, the two biggest differences are in the touch that one brings to the keyboard. So with the piano, it's all about the weight of the hand, the weight of the arm, and controlling the subtle nuances in the action. And on the organ, even on mechanical action, that you do that to a certain extent, but it's a lot more coming from the wrists and the fingers. There's not the weight that you bring to the key doesn't affect the tone in the same way that it does on the piano. And so there is a different sense of how you control the action. Mm. And I think that does, to a certain extent, affect the repertoire. I'm always amazed at pianists. I mean, they just have this dexterity that you just can't beat. And it's not that we don't do that in the organ. It's just, again, the approach is so different. Huh. Some of the 19th century repertoire, especially, as you can imagine, Franz Liszt, since he was such a virtuoso on the piano, a lot of that gets transferred to the organ. I'm kind of fumbling for words because it is hard to describe the difference. But it's just the repertoire is different, and it's idiomatic to each instrument.
Rhonda, could you weigh in on this question? I mean, I'm just thinking of 3-foot pedals versus, I don't know, what is it, 24? that you're working.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be in the position of saying we are organist better than pianists. I would never say that. But I will say that whenever people have a chance to actually see me up close playing, often the organist is hidden in the back balcony or down in a pit like where my church is. If you put up a screen and folks see what I'm doing, what I hear all the time is I had no idea all those things you were doing, right? So I'm playing a keyboard with my feet. And there's different keyboards you're playing with your hands. And then there's the whole fact of you're often either pulling stops or pressing buttons. And I think of it a lot as like you're choreographing a dance, that all these motions have to be practiced in the same way that you practice the notes, right? I'm always telling my students that you have to practice these motions as much as you're practicing how you're playing the notes. And so I think organ playing is more physical, and it's a more of a full body experience. And not to say that piano playing isn't, but there's just in some ways more kinds of things going on. So
where do you teach again, Rhonda?
I teach at Calvin University.
Calvin in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me just pick up a side note here. not on the question you asked, but on something that Rhonda mentioned about the screen. So for those of your listeners who were here for our concert in September, I did have a projection screen set up so people could see the console, and that was very well received. Now, tonight, my intent was to do that, but we have a 5 p.m. Quinceañera Mass, which is a particular celebration to the Hispanic community.
Yeah.
And I'm really debating on whether or not I'll have time to set that up because, as you can imagine, you know, you have to set up the camera, you have to get the Wi-Fi link through the Bluetooth, set up the table, and you know, and all this sort of thing. So I guess I'll probably apologize in advance that won't be a component of this.
You've got a trumpeter to pull focus
right
here. And speaking of Brian Reichenbach, I was imagining how it works for, you know, a trumpet soloist to play with an organist and to be holding your trumpet and never being quite sure where the source of sound is coming from that you're playing with, and all the delays in timing and things that can happen. How do you coordinate?
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard Brian mention that as much to me, but especially if we're playing concerts like, well, then I was in Tennessee. We played 3 concerts in 4 days. So it's bam, 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 three very different instruments, and the same thing this weekend.
Oh, three different organs, too.
Yeah, yes, so very, very different organs that he's playing with. And what he will remark on is how different the sounds are. He's always astounded. And I think we know that as organists, but you kind of forget it. And when he'll be like, oh my gosh, this organ sounds so different than the one we played with yesterday. And we were up at Calvin last night, and I know he's just going to be like, oh my gosh, this organ sounds so different. You know, and it's not a, like a good or a bad usually, sometimes, you know, but it's more just like this, the colors are different, how present it is in the room is different. Of course, the acoustic of the room is different too. You know, that all plays in. So, yeah, it's kind of fun to remember that anew every time he remarks on it.
The organs, as we've discussed, are often so different from different time periods, different styles. They're often associated with regions like Germany or France or something. And so you don't even have some of the same options on different instruments. We've talked about how as a soloist, you go in, you learn the instrument as best you can, and you kind of rearrange some of your pieces quickly to make use of the instrument as it is. And I can see where, you know, poor Brian is like, why did it sound like, you know, kind of a mid-tone harsh sound that day, and then the next day it sounds like a flute or something.
Yeah, I like to use the word reorchestrate. I think we're reorchestrating every time we go to a different instrument. And to me, that is one of the big creative challenges that I love about playing the organ, and especially about performing and traveling to different places and playing on different instruments, is every place you arrive, it's a new set of challenges. How do I make this piece work here with this set of limitations, and how do I use the strengths of this organ, and depending on the instrument, maybe downplay the weaknesses to have a really interesting experience that, you know, may or may not sound a lot like the last time I played it.
Organs also have a lifespan, and sometimes it's sad to see them deteriorating. Who raises the alarm when, you know, a beautiful instrument is starting to need really serious help, which of course costs a lot of money?
Yeah, I think that's usually the organist. I mean, as with a lot of things, you know, by the time you sitting out there in the seats can hear, it's, you know, it's kind of the last scenario. I think organists are the ones, and organ tuners and builders who are back in the case, who are seeing if there's leather failing or if there's little funky electrical things happening. And those are the kinds of things, you know, that we all cover up for a while. You know, whether it's at a church that doesn't quite have enough funds to raise, or if you're traveling somewhere, you try to downplay those kinds of things. But yeah, you know, you obviously come across those things when you're different places, and
you're just like, oh, yeah, it needs help.
Yeah.
Something has to happen. And sooner is better than later.
I guess like maintenance on your car, right? You can put it off, but it's not usually a good idea.
Yeah, you know, at the cathedral, we do a tuning twice a year when the heat goes on, when the air conditioning comes on, and that's mostly on the more delicate stops, the reeds and the mixtures. It's been a long time since we've done what's called a scratch tuning, which is where they take sort of that basic 8-foot principal sound, the basic organ sound, and start with middle C and reset it to, you know, its tuning pitch, or maybe they start on A440, whatever it is. But they start right there, and then they do the entire instrument because really with the changes in temperature and how it affects the pipes, the pitch actually, the whole organ pitch goes up and down with those temperature changes. And then in between that, there'll be little things that happen. You know, you can get in the case here, we have electric action, so you can get some dust in the console, and then it starts doing funky things, and you got to have someone come and clean the contact. Or we recently had a spring in the pedal board break.
It was just flopping.
Yeah, so we had to have that done really quickly. So little things like that come in. So it's like anything; it requires TLC. And if you let it go, these things will build up. And you know, it's just like changing the oil in your car.
Does your nose ever give something away? I mean,
I'm sorry.
Does your nose ever give, you know, a problem away, like a smell of like burning dust or something?
Oh, golly, I hope not.
Just wondering, you got to use all your senses sometimes.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever smelled anything amiss, although we had rodents in the organ case at Hope Church, and that was a little stunning there. I mean, they literally ate pipes. Like, there was teeth marks.
And actually, a major problem was what resulted in the installation of this instrument. There was a roof leak in the cathedral that basically destroyed the east case. So only half of the organ was playing. And, of course, they had to figure out what to do. Do we just repair it or do we replace it? And the decision was made to we reused, I think it was 9 stops from the original 1951 Cassavant, some of the more unique stops from that time period, and then just incorporated those into an all-new instrument. And, of course, they fixed the roof.
that certainly helps. It is one of my favorite things to learn about the King of Instruments and its, you know, ins and outs. And, you know, I feel like every organist has a certain level of bravery that is required of them as musicians that maybe some of the rest of us really don't have to summon. But let's get back to music. We have a chance to hear some more from this recording, Music for Trumpet and Organ in the 21st Century. Why don't you tell me what another selection might be that we could hear tonight in the concert at 7?
Yeah, so one of the pieces that I enjoy playing is something that Brian discovered when he was at a trumpet conference, which he went to a session on Estonian trumpet music and discovered this piece by Ester Maggi, who is apparently one of the big composers of Estonia. She just died last year. And this Canto Sentimentale is a really beautiful piece that shows kind of some soaring lyrical lines in the trumpet.
Canto Sentimentale. This is a technically free concert, open to anyone and all the public. Donations gratefully accepted. Begins at 7 o'clock. My guest is Rhonda Sider Edgington, and Mr. Brian Reichenbach will be at the concert with his trumpet. And here is music by Ester Maggi. The work is called Canto Sentimentale, and it's written by an Estonian woman composer whose name is Ester M.A. with an umlaut G.I. And if only I had Estonian background, I could pull it off correctly. And it was a recording we just heard with my guest, who is here in the studio, Rhonda Sider Edgington. Oh, dear. Friday. And Brian Reichenbach is the trumpeter we heard on the recording. He's a beautiful trumpet player. What a sound he has. And you were saying he has a doctorate in trumpet. And there are plenty of brass aficionados in Kalamazoo, brass players. So it's an equally appealing concert for people who love brass music as well tonight at 7 o'clock. Again, maybe you can give us the details, Tom, while I unknot my tongue here.
So, yes, tonight at 7 p.m. At St. Augustine Cathedral. Incidentally, you touched on something when you said, when you talked about Esther Meggie. It's no big secret that organ is a male-dominated field. So I'm actually kind of, it just worked out that this year happens to really, really have a very good representation of female artists. So we had Krista in September, we have Rhonda now, and then of course we have the Pergolesi in March that for soprano and mezzo-soprano.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of exciting.
The ladies leading the charge this year at the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series. Well, actually, there's so much I don't know about the organ world, but you know, it takes so many different kinds of skills and a background. And Rhonda, during the music, you mentioned both your parents are musicians.
That's right.
What did they focus on?
So my father is an organist. He was a church musician, and he also taught college music. He taught conducting, and theory was his big thing. Also, church music classes, and directed the Oratorio Society. My mom was an elementary school music teacher, and she always sang in all the choirs that my dad directed. And they had church jobs jointly, so she would direct sometimes the handbells and the children's choirs. And I grew up all around a lot of church music and a lot of concerts that my dad was directing. And later going to my mom's school programs. So my brother is also a musician. In fact, he's a trumpet player. I collected trumpet and organ music for years, thinking someday Eric and I are going to play a concert together. And we've just never lived in the same place. It's never worked out. So I guess Brian is kind of a substitute for playing with my brother.
Well, today is November 19th. And I know Tom must be looking at a month and a half, 6 weeks of extreme demands musically at St. Augustine Cathedral. There's Advent, there's every part of the calendar to honor and you know, to
well,
hit.
This year is one of those nasty years for organists where Christmas Day is on a Saturday. So we do Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday morning. So Sunday afternoon, we really will just collapse.
What's your story? You teach at an academic setting, so are you also on the hook for religious performances?
Yes, I'm also a church musician. I'm the organist and interim music director at Hope Church in Holland, which is a Reformed Church in America. And yeah, we got all the Christmas busy coming up as well.
Have you started thinking about that yet? Or
oh yes, yeah, we've been thinking about it for a while. You have to kind of set your sights in enough time to get all your volunteers ready, right? And of course, this year it's all more complicated with COVID and mm-hmm. trying to organize around that, singing and who can be how close and how many people, and makes it all a little more complicated. But I think after you know, so long of not being able to do those things, there's also, I think, a little more excitement and joy.
It's better this way, even
though
you have...
We can be together and we can be singing and doing these things again.
Well, tell me finally about the place where you recorded this CD and how the process of getting these wonderful pieces onto disc.
Yeah, so as I said, we've been playing together for a while, and we kind of went through all the standard organ trumpet repertoire and played a lot of that, which we enjoyed. But I also feel like organ and trumpet is not an uncommon duo, and there's a lot of pieces that you hear a lot. And at some point, we started searching out some new different pieces, and we thought, oh, it would be fun to put a disc together that has new pieces. So this was a kind of a collection of reaching out to some composers and looking for pieces. We tried to put on here all things that hadn't been recorded before. And the place we recorded is in Zeeland, right next to Holland.
Oh, here in Michigan.
Right. And it was an instrument where a friend and colleague of mine was the organist, a recently refurbished Reuter. And it's not a large instrument. It's two manuals, but it sounds really nice in the room, and it worked really well for this repertoire. So it was nice to be able to do it close to home.
I just noticed in the program booklet, recorded January 21st and 22nd, 2021.
Yeah, also, so recording in the winter is not advisable for a lot of reasons, you know, and we had to do the whole thing where you crank up the heat in the morning and then turn it off right before your session, because otherwise it's making all this whooshing and clanking.
All the air handling
things,
sound,
right? And we were like, yeah, what were we thinking? But yeah, it was kind of in the midst of COVID craziness, but we just had this project and wanted to get it done before Brian left the Midwest for Tennessee.
Well, as I said, there's a lot of music on this disc and a lot of different composers represented here, from James M. Stevenson, who starts the whole program. We heard a piece from the Solstice Sonata by Carson Kuman, who you said is currently at Harvard as a composition teacher. There's Marianne Kim. There's Renee Espera.
Also Estonian.
Also Estonian. And this one has such an interesting title. It's BLM. Is that beats per minute? No, wait, that's not quite right.
Yeah, so this was written by a friend and colleague of mine in Holland, Steve Jenkins. And as we were putting the CD together, we approached a couple different composers we knew and said, hey, would you be interested in writing a new piece? And,
oh, Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, so he wrote this in 2020. So yes, Black Lives Matter was part of the inspiration, and each of the movements is based on a spiritual from the African-American tradition. Also, each movement is dedicated to a Black artist that has been particularly inspiring to Steve. And each movement, is based on hymn tunes. So there's kind of these musical connections with each of the letters, and then there's also kind of a little word with each of the letters, which I sometimes forget. So let's see. He talked about playing M, which is moving.
Moving.
And it's also based on the hymn tune, My Lord, What a Morning.
The first movement is bopping, and better be ready. Second movement is longing, and Lord, I want to be a Christian. So BLM, right? In many iterations.
Yes. Oh, and each of the movements is dedicated to a Black artist, which also connects with the letter. So M is dedicated to Thelonious Monk.
Wonderful. Well, we have just enough time to hear this movement dedicated to Monk, and a little time to say thank you, Rhonda, for joining me here on Classical WMUK. Tom Fielding, thank you very much for bringing in artists to St. Augustine Cathedral on a wonderful concert series.
You're welcome. This is such a wonderful thing. I just enjoy this sharing this music with the community so much.
I'm really glad you got it started. And it is a free concert. Donations gratefully accepted at the door. Plenty of room in the church, of course. We talked about this last time.
Yeah, and again, we'll go over the necessary protocols now. We aren't checking, we aren't requiring proof of vaccination, and that situation is complicated with this issue of boosters now. Anyway, we hope that anyone who is unvaccinated will wear a mask. That's, I think, a courtesy that we can expect of people. Seating will be we do seat 700, and I know for Krista's concert we had about 60 people, so there's plenty of places. If you're a little nervous, you can find a place to sit by yourself, and the acoustics are good. You can hear just as clearly, you know, in a side aisle tucked away in a corner as you will in the main nave. So I hope that people will feel comfortable coming out for this.
Well, see you in spring, Tom, for the Pergolesi preview.
Thanks, yes.
And thanks, Rhonda.
Thank you.